What's going on, everybody? John Middlecoff, Three and Out Podcast, back at it again. Happy Memorial Day weekend, America. Everyone, you know, if you know someone who's lost their life, you know, defending this country, people that are in the military, I know they listen to this show. It's a big deal in my family. My dad's brother, parents were a little older, died in Vietnam. Both my grandparents were in World War II. So this day always had a, you know, it hit home, I know, for my father, who's now no longer here either. But so happy Memorial Day. Weird times, you know, this Memorial Day. But, you know, we'll get through it. We'll just keep chugging along. I'll be completely honest. I didn't even realize long weekend in Santa Cruz playing a little golf, driving home on Monday. I'm like, oh, shit, I got to do a podcast, you know. Well, what's going on? And then luckily, watch the match. I have a lot of takes on the match with Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Tiger Woods, and Phil Mickelson. We're going to do a long Middlecoff mailbag at John Middlecoff, Instagram, fire questions. I'm going to try to get through a bunch, and I won't be able to get through everyone's. Keep firing me questions as we go through the summer months. This is your show as much as it is mine. Also, appreciate everyone that's left a review on the Apple Podcast, where you can listen to Three and Out. 5-star if you like the show. You can go no stars if you don't like the show. It's up to you. But everyone that's left a review, we're well over 1,000. We'll just keep leaving reviews, keep racking up the numbers. So this little Memorial Day podcast for you. Let's start with the match. And first off, it was awesome. Now, full disclosure, golf, most people assume my favorite sport is football. It might be golf. And if anything, they're 1A and 1B. They go hand in hand. Mainly because I wasn't any good at football. Golf was the one sport that I actually had a little talent at. I'm still like a 6 handicap. I just like playing it. I've been playing it my whole life. I love the PGA Tour. I follow the PGA Tour probably not as closely as the NFL, but I don't miss any big tournament. I mean, I view the majors like I would the Super Bowl. I mean, it's a big deal to me. So this was right up my alley. You give me Tom Brady, Peyton Manning with Tiger Woods. If you had to say, who's your favorite athlete ever? I mean, for me, I'm 35 years old. It'd be Tiger or Michael Jordan. And I think there's been a lot of buzz. Michael Jordan's documentary is getting 6 million people watching. This, the match, the Capital One, the match, kind of, you know, I probably could have picked a better name, but whatever. I'm not going to nitpick or hate during mid-corona about some sweet television event. Got also about 6 million people watch that thing. And I think a lot of people assume that, like, if baseball, and I'm in that camp too, if baseball and the NBA came back, their viewership numbers would be huge. I don't know, the more I've thought about that. The Michael Jordan documentary got 6 million people to watch for 2 reasons. 1, corona, we didn't have anything else to watch. And 2, it was Michael Jeffrey Jordan, the most famous athlete of my lifetime. And arguably, besides like Babe Ruth, and Muhammad Ali, the most famous athlete ever. I'd say the second or third most famous athlete ever would be Tiger Woods. And then you throw in, I say this all the time about Tom and Peyton Manning. They were, for me, the Magic and Larry Bird of the sport. They were the two best players, the two most famous players, as the sport took off like a rocket ship in the 2000s. I mean, when football really separated itself from the NBA and Major League Baseball, they were the poster boys. And Tom's arguably the greatest quarterback of all time. I don't know where you'd rank Peyton. Probably somewhere between like 3 and 6. He's one of clearly the best quarterbacks of all time. Super famous. So you put Tiger Woods with the greatest quarterback of ever, his rival who's a top 4, 5, 6 quarterback ever, and Phil Mickelson, probably beside like Jack and Tiger, some international guy. I mean, one of the greatest golfers of all time. I mean, check out Phil's career earnings. For about a 15-year stretch, Phil's been racking up over $50 million a year. When Phil plays Pebble Beach, he lives in San Diego, he flies home every night, and he ain't checking into United. So he's got a pretty good gig. And it was awesome. it humanized. One thing the NFL really has going for it is it's still, even in a sport like basketball, baseball, football, golf, I mean, these guys are making stupid money. Stupid money. I think sometimes we throw out contract numbers like, oh, he just signed for $100 million. Think about the richest human being you know. You know, some businessman who's done really well, a millionaire. Most of those guys, maybe their business has a good year, profits, you know, $5 million, $10 million, right? You get some revenue generating. I'm not talking like Wall Street business. I'm just talking like a solid, small to medium-sized business making good money. Really, the company's making the money. The individual, he can take some of the profits. Most of these people ain't making $30, $40, $50 million a year. We just throw out like, oh, Bryce Harper, 13 years, 330. Like, that's just normal. How many, think about the richest human you know won't ever sniff $330 million. If you make $50 million, you're the top 1% of the 1%. You crushed it in life. I'm talking $50 million in your lifetime. We're seeing Steph Curry in a year and a half makes $60 million. He makes $40 million a year. Right? And I think the NFL is the one sport of the major ones. Their contracts aren't guaranteed. Like most of us, if we're employed, we can get fired at any moment for any various reasons. It's the one sport where, in basketball, they don't respect the coaches anymore. The players tell the organizations what to do. That's not how it works in football. Belichick told Tom Brady what to do, right? Think of all the players in the NFL. They have to answer to someone. It's called the coach. The coach in the sport of football, like most of us in real life, have a boss. We can kind of relate to that. They don't get guaranteed money. They get cut at any moment. Their careers are relatively short, so you realize, like, in basketball and baseball, some of these guys are just on scholarship. You're like, ah, Jacoby Ellsbury, 3 more years left, $75 million owed to him. It's like, God, the guy can't hit 200. In football, that guy'd be out of the league. And think about basketball, the dunk contest. It became, like, not cool to do. Like, none of the star players do it anymore. Why? Because they don't want to embarrass themselves. It's like, guys, it's okay to miss a dunk. We're not going to kill you for long. But when you live on social media, you think you're going to get crushed forever. The NFL, you had the greatest quarterback ever who claims he's an 8. Eyeballing Tom looked more like a 13. But I get it. Michael Jordan's, you know, notorious for having a reverse handicap. For those of you non-golfers, that's when you're like too prideful, even though you suck. You post better scores than you're actually shooting, so your handicap is higher. Like, Tom Brady ain't shooting 80. Like, I just watched him. Now, Tom Brady's probably better than he played, but anyone who's if you're listening, you're the worst golfer ever, or you're a scratch golfer, you understand the nerves that go along with golf. You stand there, you have a couple random people, maybe the foursome behind you watching you hit, you get nervous. Tom Brady looked nervous. Peyton Manning, who acted cool and just, he's great personality, they kind of put themselves out there. 6 million people watching these guys play golf. Neither of them are pro golfers. They're football players. So, I mean, it's like kind of humanized them. It really did. Tom Brady, say what you want. He's gotten a little weird avocado ice cream. He's out there, you know, and at first, the first couple holes, he's like, why is Tom not talking? Turns out his mic didn't work. Then he finally hits a shot in. He's jabbing Barkley. He's jabbing Peyton. It's just cool. You know, they put themselves in a position with the greatest golfer, in my opinion, of all time, and Phil, who just never shuts up, great, but also kind of like Peyton, a great personality, and it was just fun. They're just out there being loose while also kind of being tight and competitive and seeing two guys who are, I mean, as famous as you can get in Peyton Manning and Tom Brady playing golf. Now, I get it's for charity, and it's not maybe as crazy as I'm making it out to be, but I don't think you see a lot of athletes in other sports put themselves in front of that many people, something they're not that good at. You know, Peyton plays that little power draw, and Tom was hitting it, sprinted all over the place. I mean, Tom looked like he wouldn't have broken 100 on the first several holes. Now, he kind of got it together. But it was cool watching them in that environment. It really was. And they are great showmen. And those two guys, just like Larry Bird and Magic once upon a time for the NBA, they bring an element. Peyton probably more as a showman, but Tom, just the way he conducts himself, Tom sneaky, can let it loose. And you could tell anyone, you know, if you've played golf and you're having an awful day, it can put you in a terrible mood. So I understand why Tom, you could tell, like, try not to swear. Tom wanted to start snapping clubs. Now, he held it together and he got the train back on the tracks. But I thought just watching all those guys interact was, you can't ask for anything better from a television product. Now, was it cooler because there's nothing else on? Probably a little bit. But when you throw Michael Jordan on the screen, or you throw Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Tiger Woods on a television event, people are going to watch. They just are. If it had been Kirk Cousins, Phil Mickelson, and Dak Prescott, probably not as many people watch. Like, the stars sell. And here's the other thing. This thing went viral last week. I actually heard it. I was in the car. I didn't hear the part. But sometimes when I'm on a long drive, I'll flip on Howard Stern. And if Howard has a guest on, it's just always must listen. Whether it's a musician, whether it's an actor, whoever it is. Just because Howard's a great interviewer. And he had on Jerry Seinfeld. And it was it's just great. It's just a smooth conversation. And I saw this clip that went viral where Howard was trying to say, you know, the reason, it's kind of crazy how we both became so famous. I never dreamed when I was a nobody that I would, my goal wasn't to get this rich. I just willed myself. I wasn't going to fail. My goal wasn't to become worth hundreds of millions of dollars. It was basically like he was saying it was all will was the reason he made it. And Jerry's like, you know, actually, I'm going to call BS on that. The reason you made it was actually because of love, because you loved radio. And Jerry's like, the reason I made it is because I loved comedy. I think about it 24/7. I can do it 24/7. It's just always on my mind. I love it. And I think when you love, and I think they're right, when you love something, you don't even think when you're doing extra. You know, it's why I have to talk about sports or be in the sports world, you know, for a living. Because most other things I don't like. And if I don't like something, it's hard for me to put much time into it. I know myself. And I'm not some Harvard intellect that I can just overcome it and half-ass it and still be great at it. I'll fail. So luckily I'm recording this at like 8 o'clock on a Monday night of Memorial Day weekend. I don't even care. I get to talk about the match. And I get to do it for a living. I get a check for doing this. You know, but I don't even think about, like, I can do sports stuff, talk about this, it comes easy. And anyone who's listening that really likes what they do, you can be sitting at, you're like, sometimes you look at your desk, you're like, God, I get up at 6 a.m. to work on a project, right? And you don't even think about it. But if you're doing it for someone else and something you don't like, you might not do it. Now, sometimes we have to do things that we don't like to do. But when you really love something, like Michael Jordan, when you watch that Jordan documentary, you go, that guy loves basketball. Like, Michael Jordan could not love basketball anymore. And I think when you watch the match, you realize, definitely with golf, I say this all the time about Tiger Woods. He has back fusions. He has knee surgeries, torn Achilles. He's hurt everything. He's had DUIs. He's had a public divorce. He's worth more money than God. He does not need to be doing this anymore. And you watch that match, and my big takeaway was, holy hell, Tiger looks fantastic. Tiger's going to win more golf tournaments. Is he ever going to win the Masters again or more majors? I don't know. I mean, it's hard. I hope so. But he's going to win more golf tournaments. You watch that guy, you go, yeah, he's, I don't know if he's peak, you know, 2000 Tiger Woods, but he's top 10 locked, maybe top 5 player in the world right now. He's been in quarantine for 2 months. He's 44 years old. And the dude just eat, breathe, sleeps. He loves golf. He loves everything about golf. There's no way you could be that good without loving the sport. Same with Phil. You hear Phil talking about like a chip. He's breaking it down like you would Belichick talking about a football play. Talking about the way the grass grows. I play a lot of golf. I'm like, I've never even thought about that. He's like, the dark patch of grass. I'm like, what the hell is he talking about? But these guys are just nuts. They love it. I mean, they're addicted to it. And I think when you look at Tom and you look at Peyton, you know, I've always thought that Peyton wasn't as physically gifted as Tom. Probably similar athletes, but Tom had a much more explosive arm. And when you have a more explosive arm and you're playing in the elements, it's easier to overcome bad passes. It's why Peyton's passes sometimes in the elements can float. You know, it's like you can get away with missing your pitch location if you're throwing 98 miles an hour. But if you're throwing 91, if you're facing a good hitter, that might be off the wall. And I think sometimes Peyton, who I remember asking a guy when I scouted, They worked for the Broncos at the time. They had just signed him. I'm like, what's it like having Peyton in the building? They're like, bro, it's crazy. We had to take a couple of the scouts because he's so specific on ways he breaks down every game. He needs help. And I remember talking to some guys in Indy. They're like, oh, kind of glad he left. It's just, he's a lot. You know, 24/7, 365 Peyton Manning with football. You can't become that addicted if you don't love it. Tom Brady literally said on Tom vs. Time, I've dedicated my life. Dude eats avocado ice cream, tomatoes, doesn't eat. Somehow he gets skinnier as he gets older. He's just, at 42 years old, he's signed a two-year contract to keep playing. It's like, what is Tom Brady playing for? He's got six Super Bowls. I mean, those two guys combined, Peyton had been to three, Tom had been to nine, they've been to 12 Super Bowls. Peyton didn't want to quit playing football. He had no choice. His body just took a crap on him. He couldn't go anymore. Tom, he says he's going to end at 45. I don't know. The dude is addicted. You could see it on his face. Like, when they started competing on golf, like, how mad he was. But he's like, you know, this is for charity. I'm not going to swear. Even though a couple times, it kind of, the volume disappeared. And you're like, yeah, I think someone just dropped an F-bomb. And I probably Tom. It ain't Tiger. He's splitting every fairway. Hitting it 10 feet on every green. Tom was pissed. And I think all those guys, you have the utmost admiration. Like, as a sports fan, if you're a diehard of whatever team you watch, all you want to know is, like, my best players couldn't care anymore, right? They are all in. We're not going to win every game, but I have these guys. They're giving all their chips are in the middle of the table. We all know that's just not the case, right? I mean, last year, we could go team by team. And like, well, this quarterback kind of half-assed it. This guy, head wasn't it. Hell, this coach, he had a foot out the door. If you have Peyton Manning or Tom Brady on your team, every chip they had was in the middle of the table, on top of just every ounce of energy goes toward winning a football game. And that Jerry Seinfeld thing where he's like, to be truly great at something, you got to love it. And I think those guys, those four, the two with golf and the two with football, just, I don't think could have loved their sport anymore. And the overall product, I just thought was fantastic. I played golf on Sunday, and when I got back, I watched like hole 12 through 18. I got back to my place today. I had a DVR'd, and the first like 10, 11 holes, it was fantastic. It was so cool to watch. I'm really glad they did it and had a great viewing experience. Okay, let's dive into the Middlecoff mailbag. At John Middlecoff is my Insta. Direct messages, fire on in there, and you get your question asked here. I saw one story that happened over the long weekend was Jamal Adams. Like, I don't really have a take on Jamal Adams and whether they're going to trade him. It's like, bro, you've been in the league 3 years. Your team's awful. I like you as a player, but we just need to calm down the Jamal Adams talk. You know, I don't blame the Jets. I would not give him historic money. Let's see if we can win with the guy. Is he a winning player? I think he is. I think he's good. But I'm a little Jamal Adams out, and I like the player, you know. But gosh, I mean, he's in the storylines and the headlines and coming across the ticker and on my Twitter account a little too much for a guy that, I don't know, has never had a meaningful snap in the NFL. Not all his fault. I mean, it's a team game. But geez Louise. Do you think Daniel Jones is a franchise quarterback from Ben? That's a good question. I would lean no right now. To me, he had some moments. That first game, I think it was against Tampa this year when he filled in for Eli. He was fantastic. Now, I'd be lying if I said I watched every Daniel Jones snap this year. But I see a good athlete. He's got a solid arm. Kind of hard to judge. I mean, their line was atrocious. He didn't really have great, you know, offensive weapons besides Saquon. I'm pretty sure, did Evan Ingram get hurt? But, you know, Odell Beckham and those type guys weren't walking through the door. I would lean no. Now, I like him more than I thought. When everyone, including myself, thought them taking him at six was insane. Like, he had some moments. Maybe he could be a, you know, 7-8 year starting quarterback. When I think franchise quarterback, like, is Kirk Cousins a franchise quarterback? Is Dak a franchise quarterback? Like, when I say franchise quarterback, like, to me, there aren't 32 there aren't 20 franchise quarterbacks. How many guys are in the league right now, right? Rodgers, Russell, Mahomes, Wentz. Is Jimmy Garoppolo a franchise quarterback? I think so, but we'll see. Let's see him start 3 years and see how it goes. You know, Deshaun Watson, franchise quarterback. Drew Brees, you know, Brady was obviously. To me, there aren't. The franchise quarterback gets thrown around, I think, a little too liberally sometimes. A lot like an NBA star. You know, like, to me, there are a handful of NBA stars. You put them on your team, you got a chance to win the championship. It's like a list of five or six. Now, there are a lot of famous players. It doesn't mean they're, like, superstar players. You know, there's a small list. Like, Anthony Davis, stud player, all-star. Is he a superstar? Well, he can't be the A on a really good team. He's got to be the B. You know, Klay Thompson. Klay Thompson is very famous and is a championship-level player, but he can't be the A on a winning team, on a team that's going to win the finals, right? And I love Klay Thompson, but he's got to be your second-best player. Ideally, if he's your third-best player, you're in really good shape. I'm a farmer in Maryland. Enjoy your podcast twice a week only. I listen to it on a regular basis. Some content suggestions for the pod. How about a top 10 games on the schedule you're looking most forward to watching this year? And therefore, maybe a list. Maybe you predict records of each team in a division, breakdown division in a pod that will give you 8 extra segments. I like where your head's at. I think last year in the summer we did that, and that was before the corona. So, yeah, I mean, I think we'll go maybe division by division. I like saving, you know, you can't empty the clip May 25th. So that's probably something maybe, I guess June's right around the corner. Maybe we could attack in June some division by division. Maybe we'll do some stuff coming up for sure. Maybe have some guests on over the summer. I usually don't do guests, unless they're huge guests. We've had obviously the coaches when I went to the combine and Carson Palmer, but I've written down some ideas, kind of go off the wall. You know, this, I only get so many, you know, doing a podcast twice a week for Colin. Like I like to give my own takes. You know, I mean, we hear a million podcasts and just shows with guests, and it's like, if I don't have a relationship with the guy, you know, I think sometimes, you know, it can be very hit or miss with a guest. And I'll be completely honest, like, I don't claim to be Howard Stern as an interviewer. I think I give a more entertaining podcast just me talking, unless it's like Carson Palmer, and who just liked me and gave a great interview, or Andy Reid, or Howie, guys that I know, or Matt Nagy. And, you know, I don't know Belichick, so I can't call him, or I would. I'm a lifelong Seattle Seahawks fan, and we basically make the playoffs every year. Last year, I thought we had enough to make a serious run to the Super Bowl before we were struck with injuries, and all three of our running backs were injured within a game to go in the season. It was pretty nuts. What do you think the team needs to do to get over the hill and get back to the Super Bowl? Well, your injury luck was really shitty last year. There's no way around that, because you were 6 inches away from beating the 49ers and having a home field bye. Now, you would have been in trouble just because of all the injuries. And remember, going into that Niner game, you had a bunch of injuries. Then I think you lost someone in the Niner game. So it was just a crazy time. But when I look at Seattle, their offense is more explosive than it was in the LOB days. Obviously, their secondary is nowhere close, but their defensive line hasn't been that good. When they were really good, I vividly remember going when Seattle was really taking off just against Harbaugh's Niners, and even like the Jim Tom Sula Niner team. And their pass rush with Averill, with Michael Bennett being able to line him up everywhere, Bruce Irvin, they were just so explosive up front. And then clearly they could cover. And then with KJ Wright and Bobby Wagner, they were just tackling machines. That they were just so complete. When I watch them now, they just lack talent on defense. Now, they've drafted guys the last couple years early in the first round. Last year, they took the pass rusher. Was it early in the first round? Or, I mean, at the end of the first round, or might have been early in the second round. I forget. John Schneider trades back all the time. But I think it was actually in the first round. He was a healthy scratch all year, the pass rusher from TCU. Then they drafted this guy from Texas Tech. Like, those guys got to be good. Like, they need some impact players on defense. You know, they trade last year for Clowney, who, you know, beside the Niner Monday night game when he looked like Lawrence Taylor, can just kind of be hit or miss. Now, who knows? Maybe he could come back. It's like Clowney. What are you doing on the free agent market? Just sign a contract and play for Seattle. Like, no one's offering you $20 million a year. Fantasy question for you. 10 full-team PPR league. I'm keeping Hopkins and Mike Evans. I'm looking for a wide receiver 3. I had both Sutton and Allen Robinson on my team, and both played extremely well. Obviously, the quarterback situation in Denver and Chicago have changed. Robinson was number 8 last year with Trubisky, and I now have Foles is an upgrade. I know Foles is an upgrade. The small sample size we saw with Drew Locke was positive, so he appears to have a higher ceiling with Sutton being the number 1 guy in Denver. That should increase his value tremendously. Who would you rather have and why? I think I would go with Allen Robinson, simply because I'm with you. Sutton's a pretty good player. But look what they did. They took Fant last year in the first round. They added Jerry Jeudy this year in the first round. And they added KJ Hamler. So you just got a lot of pass-catching threats to go around. And then this offseason, they add Melvin Gordon as a running back. And Pat Shurmur's the new OC. They're going to pound the run. I like Drew Locke, the little that I saw of him last year. He looks like really talented. You know, I didn't love him coming out of Missouri. I can't pretend I broke down every one of his throws at Missouri, but I just remember last year watching him going like, God, I think they got some there. But they just got a lot of mouths to feed, and they're going to want to run the ball. Where you look at the Bears, Allen Robinson is clearly their best wide receiver. You go to Foles, who, if I remember correctly, when Foles came in for Wentz multiple years, that's when Alshon started playing well because he likes throwing the ball up to guys with big catching radiuses. Well, that's Allen Robinson's style, big catching radius. Now, listen, I don't claim to be some dominant fantasy player, but if you just think at it logically, that's how I'd look at it. I'm a Bengals fan, and I have noticed the kids are now running most of the operations now, not Mike Brown. Can the Bengals turn around with better family management? And have you ever noticed that it happened to a football franchise before with change of hands? I didn't know the family has taken on a bigger role. When I was at the Combine, I got an elevator a couple times, and Mike Brown was on the elevator. So I think he plays still a pretty big role. Now, if you're a big Bengals fan, you'd know better than me on the day-to-day operations. I know is it his daughter-in-law or his daughter? I think it's his daughter-in-law, who is like the contract negotiator. They clearly are a family-run business. To me, it's just when they had a good coach in Marvin Lewis, they drafted well, they had a good team. It's not like the Bengals are the Browns. They've made the playoffs in the last 15 years. I don't know, just off the top of my head, I'd guess like six times. They've won the division before. Like maybe 7 times. Like they've had success. Marvin Lewis made the playoffs a lot. Now, he didn't win in the playoffs, but they were winning double-digit games. It wasn't that long ago. I remember going week 1 when the Bengals played the Raiders in like 2015. That was a year that the Bengals were really good, and they beat the crap out of them. And I remember coming out of warm-ups like, God, they got a squad. So I think the Bengals, I don't think Mike Brown, for as much as he kind of gets made fun of because he's this old, frumpy-looking guy, and he's, you know, known as kind of a cheap guy. The Bengals have not really been poorly run over the last, since they hired Marvin Lewis. It was just 1 year with the Zach Taylor guy, and I saw a stat where they were in, I think 12 of the 16 games were one score in the second half. So they actually weren't as terrible, I think, as we all think, including myself, but that's a good question. Thanks for pumping out the content. Huge college football fan. My question relates to Michigan. Urban Meyer recently mentioned that Michigan hasn't been competing for recruits in Ohio like they used to. I don't feel like it's a street fight anymore, which is surprising considering Michigan's track record of stealing great players out of Ohio. Is that where Charles Woodson's from? Does this show that in an era of national recruiting pipelines, there is still something to be said about taking care of the backyard local recruits? Yeah, I mean, I'll be honest, I can only go so deep on this topic about the recruiting with Michigan in the state of Ohio, but I do think there is a balance. I'm with you. When I think Harbaugh, and clearly since he's got there, he's taken on a huge national scope, right? Tried to get sweet guys in Florida, tried to get sweet guys in California, Texas, whatever. Well, if he's missing out of guys in his quote-unquote backyard, or just that he should go toe-to-toe on with Ohio State, yeah, it's a problem. You could also counter, well, if he's losing to Ohio State, can I really crush him? Now, if he's losing that guy to like Wisconsin or Penn State, then we got a problem. But if Harbaugh, if there's John Middlecoff in Ohio, and I am some stud linebacker, and I choose to go to Ohio State, like, is that on Michigan? Now, if I choose to go to Iowa State, or if I choose to go to Oklahoma, like if I'm a blue chip, you know, Power Five elite guy, and I don't go to Michigan, and he wants me, yeah, then we got a problem. But I can't speak to the, you know, specific examples on this. I think Harbaugh, he had 7 guys drafted this year. Or was it 10? I had it written down on a previous show. I brought it up before. Like, they produce a ton of NFL guys. The last couple of years, Harbaugh's pumped a ton of NFL guys. Like, they're recruiting well. They're developing well. They just don't have a quarterback. It's like, Jim, you got to get a quarterback. I'm a Jim Harbaugh guy. But you can't keep rolling out the scrubs you're rolling out. You're never going to win anything. Like, you got to find, I don't know, like, why can't they land like a Trevor Lawrence? Why can't they find a Justin Herbert? Like, not every Trevor Lawrence is a 5-star. Justin Herbert was a no-name. The Clayton Slovis guy at USC was like a 3-star guy. Like, other programs are finding good quarterbacks. Find a Jordan Love to develop. I don't know. Find someone. That to me is Harbaugh's problem right now. They can't find a quarterback. They have enough talent at other positions. Do you think that Matt Nagy is part to blame for Mitch Trubisky's struggles for the game against Detroit and the Cowboys? I can't say Matt Nagy got full credit. And my second question, I think the Steelers should trade for Rosen, for I believe Mike Tomlin can groom him. What do you say? Matt Nagy on Mitch Trubisky. Well, I just don't think Mitch Trubisky's that good. Would Mitch Trubisky look good with Belichick? Would Mitch Trubisky look good with Andy Reid? Would Mitch Trubisky look good with Kyle Shanahan? Not the guy I watched last year. Now, if you wanted to nitpick play callings in specific games, one thing I would disagree with, you know, Nagy on his scheme a little bit. Now, he's an NFL coach. He's won a division. I just scouted, and he's my guy. But sometimes his offense, like, I'm a little more of a traditionalist. I like playing with a fullback. I like my quarterback going under center, and I like being able to run the ball down your throat. Now, what I saw last year, they were just in the shotgun all the time. And I think when you get under center, it can just calm things down if you have a fullback and just slam people. It just helps everyone breathe a little bit. Then you can hit play action. You can also run I love the shotgun. I don't mind having the quarterback in the shotgun with the running back sitting next to him. But sometimes the gun runs, again, I that's a little soft to me. Now, I understand that everyone's doing it, but I enjoy slamming the ball. Now, Coach Reed can get away with that a little bit. He had Alex Smith, who was really accurate. And he has Mahomes now, who's just one of the best players we've ever seen. Like, Mitch, if Mitch is going to succeed, they have to have a more consistent running game. Now, they got a tight end in the draft. They got Nick Foles. I mean, it might not even matter, right? Nick Foles might be better suited for that offense. Hell, he is better suited for that offense. Nick Foles is just a better player than Mitch Trubisky. All right? Mitch had one good season. It was under Matt Nagy. His other two, he's looked awful. And the Josh Rosen thing, yeah, I wouldn't be against it if I was the Steelers. Now, Mike Tomlin doesn't coach quarterback, so it'd kind of be on Roethlisberger and the quarterback coach / offensive coordinator to figure out Rosen. Could Tomlin help him out confidence wise, mentality wise? Could that the Steelers organization, and, you know, for sure, but like, he's not gonna work on his footwork in the pocket at practice, if that's what you're saying. I'm not very caught up on all the episodes, but I'm getting there, so I'm not sure if you've answered this. Do you see Stidham being the answer, or do you see Bill going with the vet Hoyer trying to run a similar offense we are used to seeing in New England? Well, Bill Belichick's going to try to win games. So week one, he will start whoever he thinks better. Now, Jared Stidham has been in the system now a year, so he's going to know the offense. Jared Stidham is physically more gifted than Brian Hoyer. But if he feels that Brian Hoyer's better week one, he'll start. And if he's just in the mix, he'll just play with who's ever playing better. But I think Stidham is just more talented than Brian Hoyer, so he'll end up starting, you know, week one. Is he quote-unquote the answer? I got no clue. Neither do the Patriots. That, to me, is why you have to play him. And it's why that maybe after a couple games, unless they're in, like, the playoff hunt, if he isn't starting, which I think is unlikely, we're going to see a lot of Stidham. And Belichick's going to see what he has. And if he has something, he'll roll with him. If he doesn't, he'll just upgrade in this offseason. He'll be very black and white with it. I don't think he's tied to him. I don't think he's worried. If he's good enough, great. I think he wants him to be good. He drafted the guy. But if he's not, no one pivots faster than Bill Belichick, right? Nobody pivots faster. Like in golf, you grab a mulligan, like he'll just grab another ball, you know? If Stidham, like, is an out-of-bounds shot, let's be like, okay, just hit a provisional, hit another one. We'll just do something else. So Stidham, you can't ask for anything more. Now, you can. Ideally, you don't want to be the guy that attempts to replace Tom Brady. But that's just it's also his opportunity. Is Tom leaving creates his opportunity. I'm a Bills fan. Based on our schedule, I can't see us ending up with 9-plus wins this season. Please prove me wrong. Well, you guys play the AFC and NFC West, so those are very, very tough games, right? The both divisions are really, really good. I think the NFC West, probably the most talented division in football. I think you guys, if I remember correctly, play the Niners at Levi's on Monday Night Football. It's just, I think the Bills are good. And if you're a good team, you win 9-plus games. You're in the AFC East, where you now should have the best team with Tom being gone. You know, is it going to be easy? I understand the schedule moves the needle. We all get fired up talking about it. The hypotheticals every year on the schedule, though, are just that, hypotheticals. We have no clue who's going to be injured. It's a huge part of football, unlike the other two sports. Injuries, there's a reason. Every week there's an injury report. So you have major injuries, you have weekly injuries. They impact the sport greatly, one. Two, every year we see teams that sucked and then turn around are good. So you go, well, the NFC West was really good. Well, what if Arizona takes a step back and so do the Rams? And all of a sudden, you know, you're like, well, I thought the NFC West was really good. Turns out it's not as good. Maybe San Francisco takes a little step back. Instead of winning 13 games, they win 10. And Seattle is just Seattle. They're not as talented, but they got Russell Wilson. Or the AFC West, we're like, all these teams are on the come. What if the Raiders actually aren't and they're not any good? And then, what if Tyrod Taylor stinks and they're not any good? And Denver Broncos, what if Drew Lock isn't good? So you never know. You got Miami, you got the Jets, you got, you know, an unknown Patriot team. I think you'll be fine. If I'm a Bills fan, I'm like, bring it freaking on. We got a legit defense. We got a legit coach. We got a very talented young quarterback. We just added Diggs. The one thing that would impact the Bills, and I think it would impact several teams in the NFL, but for the Bills specifically, like the Chiefs, they have a huge home field advantage. But they're the best team in the league. So whether there's 70,000 people there or zero, they still got Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid. They're going to kick most people's asses. The Bills, that having that home field advantage for a team that, let's face it, has never really done anything. Now, they made the playoffs two of the last 3 years, but they've been one and done in both times. They've never accomplished anything. They haven't won the division. Their fan base does matter, and they have a raucous place, so if no fans, that would impact them. I'm a diehard Falcons fan and wanted to get your opinion on how you think they will do considering how stacked the NFC South is. Do you think the Falcons passing on CeeDee Lamb was a mistake, or did they make the right pick on a reach for A.J. Terrell? Talking to people in the league, they thought A.J. Terrell was the best corner after the top two. So no one was shocked that he went in the first round. Now, I don't know anybody, just like probably most fans, that would say, I'd rather have A.J. Terrell than CeeDee Lamb. Like, every board in the league probably had CeeDee Lamb above A.J. Terrell, which could include the Falcons. They were desperate for a corner. And I think sometimes when you're desperate for a position and you force it, sometimes you can make a wrong decision. Now, listen, I try to be, you know, not overreact. I mean, I naturally do. We all do. But, like, AJ, what if AJ Terrell's the best corner in the class? Like, we see all the time guys miss. I thought D. Milner was going to be a stud. The dude sucked. Mo Claiborne wasn't any good. Like, hey, corners are very, very hit or miss. Everyone acted like Okuda's the next, I don't know, Deion Sanders. We'll see. He went to Detroit. Probably won't be any good, right? I mean, they miss on a lot more picks than they hit. Actually, they take good players. They just don't play as well for Detroit. Then they leave, and then they play well. But, yeah, I just think the Falcons, when you look at the division, you go, the Saints, to me, are the heavy favorite. if Tom and Arians can mesh, they're going to be really good. And the Panthers are going to stink. So what Falcons am I getting? Am I getting the team that was atrocious the first, you know, 7-8 games last year? Or am I getting the team down the stretch that pulled names out of a hat and switched positions and coordinators and beat the 49ers down the stretch in San Francisco? I don't know. Guessing on how good the Falcons are going to be is probably, of all the teams in sports, probably the one of the hardest. Big fan of your show. It has become my go-to sports podcast. My question is kind of a random one, but whatever happened to AJ McCarron? Not a big talent or anything, but I do remember he's supposed to be the next Browns quarterback before they botched the trade. I think AJ McCarron is the backup for the Houston Texans right now. Why don't the Colts get Cam Newton? If Phillip Rivers couldn't do much with tons of blue-chip talent around him in L.A., why do they think they're going to go in Indy? Or why don't they just keep Jacoby Brissett as the starter? He wasn't half bad either and came through the Belichick system. Well, I think Rivers, their head coach and their offensive coordinator love him. I think they're just betting on Rivers had one terrible season and is going to bounce right back. I don't necessarily agree with that, but that's what they're thinking. And when you give Rivers $25 million and you have Jacoby Brissett as the backup and then you draft Jacob Eason, you just can't sign Cam Newton. It's just not even an option. It's not even an option. Diehard 49er fan since 87. Why does the national media shit on everything we do? Always a negative take whether we are a good team or a bad team. Tell me I'm crazy if you have to have a grown man. I can't take it. You're the only real 49ers media guy I follow. I don't live in the U.S., so I have a different outlook on media coverage of my team. I'll be honest, I feel like the Niners get a lot of positive pub. You know, in general, the West Coast teams don't get talked about as much as, you know, the East Coast teams. It's just the nature of it. And up until Fox Sports 1 built out of L.A., I mean, all the media was based in New York and Bristol, Connecticut. As us, you know, just us blue-collar West Coast people, just the Northeast elites, you know, they talk about the Jets ad nauseum, never shut up about the Giants or the Redskins. I mean, it's like, God, which I get. I mean, you just talk about the teams that you see and care about the most. And most of the people that have worked for ESPN over the years have just been East Coast people. But I think there's more balance now. And I also think the Niners are the biggest football brand on the West Coast. And when they're good, people like them. And Kyle Shanahan's got a lot of respect. I think the probably the one negative thing is the questioning of Jimmy Garoppolo. And that's fair. I mean, he's been a one-year starter. Now, I think people are probably overly critical of him. But okay, it's a fair conversation to have. Love the show. I'd like to know your thoughts on North Dakota State quarterback Trey Lance. Do you think the jumps to the first round due to the fact Carson Wentz has proven to be a franchise quarterback from the same school? I've never seen him play. I mean, I haven't watched that much North Dakota State football. You still have the best Jerry Jones impression ever. I appreciate that. After a long Memorial Day weekend, I don't know if I can do the Jerry right now. But, yeah, I haven't seen the North Dakota State guy. But, you know, I think I've seen some people tweeting about him. In this day and age, the buzz, you know, Carson Wentz. Whenever you have a guy hit from a small school, that school gets taken a lot more seriously down this, you know, moving forward. So, if this guy can play, one, even if Carson Wentz hadn't gone to North Dakota State, if this guy could play, people are going to watch him. But I do think Carson Wentz coming from there kind of changes the game. I was hoping you could weigh in on what you think about Tom Brady and Tampa Bay Buccaneers. I know a lot of media outlets are saying they'll go 8-8 and maybe 9-7. But I'm wondering, with you seeing their schedule, what you think of as a realistic outcome will be for their season and how deep you think they can go into the playoffs. Again, the schedule thing, I think we make a big deal about schedules. Every year, it's like, the hardest schedule turns into an easy schedule, vice versa. You just never know. You know, I mean, a year ago, the Packers were bad, fired McCarthy, and the Niners were bad and had the number 2 overall pick. This year, they were the 1-2 seeds in the NFC. I just think so much can change. Tampa went 7-9 last year with Jameis Winston, who threw 30 picks. 7-9. So Tom Brady is easily worth 2 wins more than Jameis. Now, Bruce Arians just wins. That's just what he does. So those two guys, like, it's hard for me to bet against them not having a winning record. Now, with Corona, them not being able to practice, even though Tom's been practicing with them, I think there is a chance that they'll mesh fast. But there's also a chance that that first month could be a little rocky, working out some things. Tom Brady's, you know, him, Josh McDaniels, and Bill Belichick been together a long time. So now he's going to go to Leftwich and Arians with, like, Julian Edelman and Gronk. I almost said Gronk's not walking through the door. Gronk is walking through the door. I forgot that. Gronk is on the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. That will help. You know, having Gronk there to talk to the tight ends and wide receivers will help a lot. I actually think his role as, like, a player, quote-unquote, coach is probably as big of a role as him being a player on the team. Because there's a chance he doesn't have that much left. There is a chance that he still has a little left, you know, and he's still a really good player. But him just being able to tell O.J. Howard or Mike Evans or Chris Godwin, this is what Tom likes. This is what Tom means when he says this. This is what Tom thinks when you're running this route. And it's one thing when the coach is telling you. It's another thing when you're eating a chicken sandwich in the lunchroom and Gronk's sitting there like, Mike, don't worry, Tom. This is what Tom likes. And it's just you hear it from another voice. So I think they're going to be good. I just expect them to be a playoff team. It's really that simple. I don't see if Tom stays healthy with their coaching staff and their talent on their roster. It's hard to see them not winning 9 games. And I think 9 games in this 2020 with the playoff format, 7 teams, you're in the playoffs. Appreciate everyone listening. Happy Memorial Day. Have a good week. And I'll talk to you a little later. See you.